प्रिय नमो बंधु अनि भगिनीनो नमो बुद्धाय जय भीम. So yesterday we began to look at the particular teaching, the particular presentation of the Dhamma that we get from Urgyen Sangrakshita. And we looked at it in terms of its depth. Or maybe better, its height. We saw how we make progress from integration, positive emotion, spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, to no more effort. And in that way we got a glimpse, a picture of what it is that we're involved in. The Tri Ratna Bauda Mahasangha is a complete path. It's a path of regular steps. And it leads to enlightenment itself. And if we all put ourselves faithfully into these practices, we will make progress in that way. This is not just theory. Tonight we're remembering two of our very, very dear friends. Just 2 years ago today, our two friends, Dhammachari Sudarshan, Dhammacharini Orisaki, were killed in a very sad accident. And although it's very sad, I must say, I never think of them with sadness. I miss Sudarshan. He was such a good friend. And such a dear man. And I miss Bodhisaki. Who is also a very good friend of mine. I miss eating at her house. And trying not to leave with too much food in my stomach. But I don't feel sad, strangely. Because both of them were such outstanding disciples of Urgyen Sangrakshita. Sudarshan had been an order member for much longer than Bodhisaki. And he'd been practicing this complete path for many years. And it showed. If you met Sudarshan, you knew here was a man of great spiritual depth. He was a very simple man. Very humble man. But you knew when you met him, you were meeting somebody of exceptional positivity. He was the proof of this path. And he's still following that path, I'm sure. Bodhisaki had taken longer to come to that point. But she was fully into it. And all the karmic influence of her effort will be with her. So I don't feel sad when I think of that. I'd really like to meet them. Every day I think of them. Occasionally I'm sitting in a meeting and I think Sudarshan is there. But I don't feel sad. Because I'm completely confident in them. Because I know that they practice the path. And they're not the only ones. You know, there are many Dhammacharis, Dhammacharinis who've passed away. And many of them are quite outstanding individuals. Just yesterday I met Sir Dhammachari Akashabodhi's son here. And Akashabodhi was on all these retreats with me. And he put himself so fully into this path. A man of burning faith. So these are the proofs of the path. If you put your feet on the path and walk forward, you will make progress. This is guaranteed. Just as water flows down to the ocean, you will flow down towards enlightenment. This is the nature of reality. Of course, they've got more work to do. The path is not complete. But I know they will not lose the path. And that can be the same for us. So when I think of Bodhisaki, Sudarshan, Akashabodhi, I just think I must make more effort. I must be like them. So yes, we're remembering them tonight. And I'd like to dedicate my talk tonight, especially to Sudarshan and Bodhisaki, because it's their anniversary. But also remembering all those great heroes of the Dhamma who've come through these doors. So we need to go a bit further tonight. We've seen how we progress from integration to positive emotion. Especially through Anapanasati and Maitri Vikas. This corresponds to Shamatha. Then we've seen how we move on to Vipassana. And first of all, to spiritual death. Especially through the six element practice. But that is not the end. When you die to self-clinging, something is reborn. Something of the Buddha is born in you. So we practice this phase by contemplating the Buddha. If you like, you're contemplating yourself at the end of the whole process. You're seeing what you will be like when you've fully transformed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
but even that is not enough. You move on to the stage of no more effort. I really like to think of this stage where you just don't have to try anymore. Everything just spontaneously unfolds without any effort on your part at all. And it unfolds in a more and more creative way. We shouldn't think of enlightenment as a sort of blank. We shouldn't think of it as a nothing. What it is, we can't really know. But it is a something. Something extremely, supremely desirable. Peace. The relief from all the struggle, all the pain. End of all the conflict with other people. End of all the conflict with yourself. Complete calm, complete radiance. That's where this path ends. But brothers and sisters, let's be realistic. We have to be realistic sometimes. We are here. We're right at the beginning of the path. We're struggling even to get our feet onto the path. We're a bit like we're trying to climb a ladder, and every time we put our foot on it on the first rung, it falls down. So we need to see what it is that we need to do. What is it in principle that we need to do? And how are we going to do it? Spiritual life is so vast. There's so much to it. So how are we, given our situations, to practice the Dhamma? I know what life is like in India. I know what family life is like in India. It's very positive in many ways. But it's very, very demanding. You don't get a lot of peace, you don't get a lot of calm. There's a lot of worries. There's a lot of struggle. People often don't give you the space to do what you want to do. Often there isn't the space to do what you want to do. We have to live in the midst of this situation. We have our own problems in the West, they're a bit different, but we have them there too. There's one thing, noise here. That the Buddha spoke of noise as a thorn to meditation. It's very difficult to meditate when there's a lot of noise. I can turn my hearing aid off, but I can still hear it. I can turn my hearing aid off, but I can still hear it. So yes, noise is always there. So does that mean we can't practice the Dhamma? at Sudarshan, look at Akashavodhi. Look at so many of them. They've really practiced the Dhamma very hard in the midst of their ordinary lives. So why shouldn't we? So how do we move forward on this path given our situations? So what Sangharakshita says to us is that we can look at these five stages as five aspects. We can look at them vertically, or we can look at them horizontally. Vertically, they give us the distance that we've got to travel. Horizontally, they show us the range, the breadth of what we must do. And they give us the principles that we must examine and bring to life in our lives. So again, we've got integration. We've got positive emotion. Spiritual death. Spiritual rebirth. And we've got what I call spiritual receptivity. So these five elements need to be present in our daily lives. You hear me? Daily life. Maybe I should say hourly life. Hourly. So let's look at them in turn and see how we might put them into practice. So first of all, there's integration. I was stressing yesterday, this is the basis for the whole path. And it's probably the one that we need to work on most. Of course we do it by doing anapanasati as often as we can. But probably few of you are able to do anapanasati every day. So does that mean you can't be practicing integration? Does that mean you can't be practicing integration? No, of course it doesn't. So what can you be doing? Well, you can be trying to be aware of your body. You have to walk somewhere. So don't just walk along chatting. Or this terrible habit people have now of just walking along talking on a mobile phone. The other day I was near my home in Wales, in the UK. And I climbed a mountain near my house. It's quite a steep climb to get to the top. Takes 2 hours to climb up there. It's a wonderful view. You can see all the mountains stretched out beyond you. You can see the ocean. You can hardly see any houses. So I was just appreciating this view. And then I heard somebody talking. And there was somebody walking along up in this beautiful view, talking on a mobile phone. And he wasn't just talking, oh, what a wonderful view. He was saying, no, 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 I think you must sell that. was doing business. In this wonderful view. He was hardly aware of where he was. So we need to take opportunities just to be where we are. Now, it's quite interesting. I think that this mindfulness of the body starts with two things that really need a lot of attention in India. Exercise. It's very difficult to be mindful of your body if you're unfit.
If your body's really sort of unheavy, heavy, and
you don't want to feel it. If your body is very heavy and unfit, you don't want to feel it. And I think it's very important that people do a lot more exercise. And of course, food. I love Indian food. But I have to be very, very careful. Because a lot of fat, a lot of refined food, a lot of sugar. So I come from England like this. And I go back from India like this. So we need to be careful. It shows no mindfulness of your body if you're unfit and overweight. Quite a simple place to start. I think it'd be very difficult to meditate if you're unfit and unhealthy. So, mindfulness integration needs to start very basic point. And in Buddhism, a lot of stress is put on walking meditation. And you can do it anywhere, anytime. You just find a quiet place and you just walk up and down. As you get more concentrated, you can walk more and more slowly. And it can be a very, very pleasurable experience. Just as if your body is flowing along. Probably it's the form of meditation that is most accessible to most people. And then of course we all do some repetitive actions. At one point I was recommending the chapati practice. Sorry gents, you'll have to learn this one. I've made a chapati. It wasn't exactly round, but it was a chapati. But you know, when you're making, look, you see, you make like that. But it's something you do again and again. So you can be very, very aware while you're doing it. Huh? Maybe even do it a bit slowly. So it becomes a way of focusing your mind. There are many, many actions that probably everybody takes in that repeated way. When you're doing something that doesn't demand much intellectual effort, just be aware of your body. Personally, I like gardening. And I like just to go out and dig the garden, put plants in and weed them. And I'm not thinking of anything, I'm just doing this simple action, aware of my body. Sometimes you can experience even a bit of preeti from that. You just feel very joyous. So repeated actions as a basis for mindfulness. So while I'm talking, please be thinking what you could do or what you are doing. Do those things that bring about a greater awareness of your body. Of course, you also need to be aware of your feelings. You need to be aware of your thoughts. And often that's much more difficult. Because thoughts come and go like the wind. Feelings just run like flame. Before you've caught them, they've gone. Or rather, you've gone into reaction. So you need to try to learn to catch your feelings, catch your thoughts. Of course, speaking with friends is a very good way of doing this. Not just gossiping or chatting. Not just talking about cricket. Not talking about the neighbours. But you're talking about your own feelings, your own thoughts. So that you become more aware of what is going on inside you. That will help you to become more integrated. I think this is a very important exercise for all of us. Really, you could say it's an aspect of friendship. People who we can explore our own feelings and thoughts with. In Sri Ratna Bhavana Mahasangha, we call this often reporting in. And reporting in means really exploring with each other what is going on inside. Not talking about other people, talking about yourself. Enough for you to become more aware of what is happening. And you'll find yourself resolving a lot of difficulties in this way. You'll learn more and more about yourself. You'll learn how to work with yourself. I often feel this is what should be taught at school. In fact, there's a movement in education in the West called emotional intelligence. In many schools in Britain and in America, now children are taught emotional intelligence. They're taught how to understand their own feelings, how to work with them, how to understand their own character. So I think this is a very good thing, and something I hope that our Sri Ratna Bhavana Mahasangha is quite good at.
आणि मला असं वाटतं की ही अशी गोष्ट आहे ज्याच्यामध्ये तिरातील बौद्ध महासंघ खरंच खूप चांगला आहे.
Unfortunately, it's only quite good, it's not good enough. We need to be much better. And we need to do it by taking very seriously this stage of integration. So we're learning more about who this being is. What's going on inside us? How these processes work? We're becoming more aware of this physical being. That's the stage of integration. And you can find in your daily life many opportunities for developing integration. One very good way of developing integration is to notice when you're not integrated. So you say, I said I was going to do this. But I haven't done it. So what does that tell me about myself? So using the fact that we are not integrated as a way of gaining integration. And we need to work at this a very great deal. I remember listening to one meditation master. And one of his disciples was asking him, you know, I want to meditate. But every time I sit to meditate, I just can't discipline my mind. So he said two things. Well, the guru said two things. So he said, first thing is, if you want to discipline yourself, do some simple action every day. He said, for instance, get up in the morning, pick up a chair, and twist it round like that, and then put it back again. Well, you see, you're disciplining yourself to do something regularly. The second thing he said was, well, if you're doing the Anapanasati, and your mind wanders, get up and run around the shrine three times. Well, probably for most of us that would mean a lot of exercise. But you see what I mean? You discipline yourself deliberately, consciously. Take something that you recognize is lack of integration and discipline yourself to change it. Slowly, slowly, you will do it. You all know this from studying. To begin with, you can hardly read one page. Your eyes start closing halfway down the page. But after some time, you can read a whole book and then read another one. We need to build our muscles. And yes, this is integration. We need to do a lot of work on integration. But that's not enough. We also need to be developing positive emotion. of course, it's more difficult when you're not very integrated. But most of us are integrated enough. We can do something. So of course we try to do the Maitri Vikas every day. But if you can't do it every day, you can at least develop those thoughts every day. You can give yourself a discipline. You can be walking down the road. And in your mind you're saying, may they be well, may they be happy, may they be free from suffering, may they progress. So you can be consciously developing thoughts of Maitri in all situations. You can make it like a sort of mantra. And yes, if you do this, Maitri will flow. But there's probably one situation which is the most helpful. That's a difficult situation. It's when you've got some real difficulty, especially with somebody else. And this is a very common experience. This is a really good opportunity. Because of course what you feel when somebody's difficult with you is angry, upset. So this is your opportunity to develop positive emotion. Now, it's not easy. I've tried many times and failed many times. But it's a wonderful opportunity. There's one famous, very ancient Indian guru, Shantideva, who says that your worst enemy is actually your best friend. Because they demand of you that you develop Maitri. And it's interesting, if you feel upset and disturbed and even hateful towards the enemy, you give them power. Your happiness is in their hands. But when you develop Maitri towards them, you come into a positive relationship. Now, as I say, it's not at all easy. It's not at all easy. Of course, you feel upset. You feel hurt. You feel an injustice has been done. You're not getting the understanding you want. You're not being taken seriously, whatever it is. Somebody needs some Maitri. You need some Maitri. Yes, this situation is very difficult. Give yourself some Maitri. You're the best person. You know you're suffering. So you could say, well, accept your own suffering. And wish that you can get out of it. And you will. Guaranteed. This is the law of karma. If you make a positive effort, positive results will come. So work with the difficult situations. another great Indian guru said that the Dhamma is turning difficulties into opportunities. If you can take a difficulty and convert it into a possibility, that's the Dhamma. Don't complain. Don't moan. Feel sympathy for yourself, empathy for yourself. And give yourself a lot of Maitri. When you do that, you'll begin to feel you can have Maitri for the other person. So you've got many, many opportunities for developing Maitri. Opportunities for developing positive emotion. You don't have to sit on your cushion to develop Maitri. If you are doing the Maitri Vikas Dhyan Sadhana, it will be easier to practice outside it. I imagine most of you work in various offices and so on. Maybe factories, I don't know. And you'll have many opportunities for Maitri. The boss will give you opportunities. Your fellow workers will give you opportunities. Sometimes you'll hear really stupid casteist remarks. So I was in Modinagar in UP just 3 days ago. And all of the order members I was talking to there reported the caste difficulties they had at work. So, well, you have to use that as an opportunity. That doesn't mean accepting it. One of our Dhammacharinis, this amazing woman, Shraddha Bhadri. She's only that high, but she's a second Dan black belt. And she was on the metro in Delhi. And a man came up behind her and, well, started to molest her. Big mistake. So she turned around and punched him on the And, well, she said she was angry. But she didn't feel hate. She just didn't want anybody else to suffer from that. Others didn't have her courage, her boldness, her training. She was trying to confess it to me. I said, no, do it again. Yes, you shouldn't feel hatred. But sometimes that sort of response is the only way to change things. Don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating violence on a large scale. But having Maitri doesn't mean being weak. In fact, Maitri gives you strength. It gives you confidence, self-confidence. And this is what we need. So there are many, many opportunities for this sort of development. Well, so far, in a way, so easy. We can develop integration. I hope you've already thought of what you are doing and what you could do. And the same for Maitri. I hope that you do get away on retreat and do deep meditation. But in the midst of your ordinary life, you can be developing integration and positive emotion. What about spiritual death? This is very much more interesting. How do you bring about spiritual death in your daily life? Well, what is spiritual death? Well, of course, it's the ending of self-clinging. It's the recognition of anicca. It's the recognition of anatma. There is no permanent fixed self, as we saw yesterday. It's the ending of it's the recognition of dukkha. It's the recognition that if we crave, we will suffer. We recognize that we will not have complete happiness until we gain liberation. This is what spiritual death really means. So how can you practice this in daily life? Just look around you. Just look inside you. Things are ending all the time. Anicca is obvious. Somebody dies close to you. Reflect on what that means. We must all die. Whatever is created must be destroyed. Whatever comes into being must pass away. Absorb the lesson. Really look at what's happening in your experience. There are opportunities every moment, every day. This lecture started. Don't worry, one day it'll end. So pay attention to that. I heard a wonderful story, a Zen story the other day. You know that in a Zen monastery they drink their tea in meditation. And each monk has a cup. And there's a special tea monk. And he has a big kettle, tea kettle. And he goes around each monk and pours the tea into their cup. So one day, one monk was holding up his cup. And while the tea monk was pouring the tea, his mind wandered. Oh, where did I leave my shoes? And he moved his hands like that. So boiling hot tea spilled on his hand. His hands went out like that. The cup went down like that. And he saw it hit the ground. And he saw it shatter into 1,000 pieces. And he gained enlightenment. You see, he'd been meditating a lot. He'd got integration, he'd got positive emotion. When he saw anicca, he saw it in depth. So we can use the situations of our ordinary life. You can see the life that goes on around you. One of the things that I find in talking to so many people is that people tie themselves in so many knots. They make their lives so complicated. And then they pull those knots tight. And of course it really hurts. But when you see it and you're not involved yourself, you can see that it's unnecessary. You can see how craving leads to suffering. Of course, you need to see it in here too. Well, we always feel our own knots are not our fault. Other people have tied our knots. No, it's our own craving. We tie our own knots and suffer as a result. Look at what's going on. All the time the reality of life is around us. The Dhamma is not telling us some information that's about something that's, you know, it's just abstract. The Dhamma is pointing to our own experience. It's saying, look at your experience. Anicca isn't somewhere else. It's here, it's now. Anatmata is not somewhere else, it's here, now. Dukkha resulting from Krishna is not somewhere else. So reflect on your life. Study what the Buddha has to say about life. The Buddha has taught us how to get free. He's given us the instructions, if you like. Read them daily. Baba Sahib has given us a wonderful compilation of the Buddha's basic teachings. Read the Buddha and his Dhamma and see how that applies to you. In the Buddha and his Dhamma, the Baba Sahib quotes a lot from the Dhammapada. If you just read one verse from the Dhammapada every day and really reflected on it, you'd die spiritually. So apply the Dhamma to your direct experience. It's quite straightforward. Somebody described once the Dhamma as like selling water beside a river. If you say to people, look, go and drink, they don't want to. But if you put it in a very nice bottle and you charge a good price, they'll drink it. And if you have Shah Rukh Khan and Aishwarya Rai selling it, then you can go even better. You can tell how old fashioned I am. Yeah. I'll find out what he said later. So yes, but the Dhamma is just about what's going on right now. Don't go and drink the bottle, drink from the river. Read what the Buddha has to say and then look at your experience. And you'll immediately begin to find some relief. I just led a retreat for some young people in England. And there was one young man, Dhamma Mitra, who was telling me that 5 years ago he decided to commit suicide. He just couldn't see the point of life. He was a drunkard. Just stand back a little. Feedback. He was taking drugs. And he couldn't see the point of going on. And then he heard a lecture by Bhante Sagarakshita. And he said, from that moment on, his life has completely changed. At last he knew what life was really about. He realized everything is impermanent. Everything is without fixed self. It's craving that leads to suffering. So when he realized that, he felt free. His life has been completely changed. So, you have the opportunity to die spiritually. And you will find great freedom in that death. But we need to see where it is that we're trying to go. Spiritual death isn't the end. There's something very, very positive left over. So we need to reflect on the Buddha. We need to do Buddha Anusmriti. We need to do it every day. If we can, we need to do it all the time. When we bow to the Buddha, we're doing Buddha Anusmriti. When we offer Agavati, we're doing Buddha Anusmriti. Maybe we just sit and we look at the Buddha. That's Buddha Anusmriti. And we're sort of connecting with the Buddha. We're in a sort of communication with him. Well, we know this isn't really the Buddha. But in our creative imaginations, it is. Just like that statue is Baba Saheb. We feel towards that statue as we feel to Baba Saheb. If Baba Saheb was there, we'd feel the same. If the Buddha was here, we'd feel the same. So have a Buddha Murti in your home. Treat it with great reverence, great respect. Try to feel the Buddha is really there. Recite Vandana. for instance, the Tiratanabandhana. In the Buddha Vandana, we say the Buddha's wonderful qualities. Learn what those qualities are. Reflect on those qualities. Try to feel the Buddha is with you all the time. I was saying all this in a talk I gave at the London Buddhist Centre. And a woman came to me afterwards. Interestingly, she was of Indian origin. Of course, she was as English as me in every other way. Maybe third generation, second generation. But she said, well, I'm glad you said that about feeling the Buddha is with you all the time. She said, everywhere I go, I feel the Buddha is walking 3 paces in front of me. Just following the Buddha. Well, if we could feel that, we could really go beyond ourselves. The great difficulty about spiritual death is that we're frightened. What happens if there's no I? We're terrified of letting go of I. We just think there's going to be a big blank. The film ends. That's it. The film ends and that's it. That's what we feel. But there's something beyond self. It's not some other self. It's not some God or anything like that. It's a way of being aware which does not involve self. This is what the Buddha was. This is what the Buddha had. So when we contemplate the Buddha, we gain the courage to let go of self. If we don't feel there's anything beyond I, then we don't let go. Then we start fighting. My I, his I. So we need to go beyond. We need to feel there's something bigger than I. Not a God, but a completely different state of being. And if we open ourselves up to that, we can experience it. When we contemplate the Buddha, this is what we're doing. Bring the Buddha into your daily life. You know, in many places in Maharashtra, you have so many viharas. And you go into the vihara. And you see the Buddha sitting there. And there's dust on his head. There's dead flowers in front of him. And the Buddha's saying, hello, anybody here? I'm here. But we forget the Buddha. Oh, we've got a good vihara. Better than most people's vihara. But we forget the Buddha. Vihara means dwelling place. Dwelling place, place of dwelling. It's the dwelling place of the Buddha. If we don't remember the Buddha, it's not a vihara. It's just a piece of plastic or a piece of plaster. But if we remember the Buddha, it is the Buddha. In our creative imaginations, in our feeling, and that enables us to go beyond ourselves. So how can you bring the Buddha into your daily life? How is the Buddha in your daily life? Where is the Buddha in your daily life? Are you remembering the Buddha? If we do that, then well, we'll definitely find our lives of a vast perspective. So one more aspect. And that's what I call spiritual receptivity. We can't practice no more effort at this stage. If we did no more effort, then we would just slip back. But what we need to be doing is developing openness. Develop receptivity. You know, you're listening to me. And you're listening to me very attentively. I'm trying to communicate the Buddha's words through our teacher Sangrakshita, again Sangrakshita. You need to let them, yes, into your brain. You need to let them into your heart. Even you could say into your blood. We need to be receptive to the words of the Dhamma. We need to be receptive to other people. Listening to them. But especially looking for real communication. Communication isn't just about the exchange of words or information. Communication is something to do with, you could say, feeling. It's like tuning in a radio. And when communication is really good, what you pick up isn't in the words. There's a very strong feeling of meeting heart to heart, mind to mind. We need this receptivity. We need receptivity to the natural world around us. We're surrounded by life. That there's so many plants and trees and so forth. So many insects, birds, animals. They're all life like we are. They're our cousins. Our cousins.
Cousins.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did say cousins. What's that avanga of Tukaram? About the tree, Rook.
Ah,
yes. I won't sing it now, I'll sing it later. But it's that sort of spirit that you feel as life in the world around you. And you're picking that up directly. You're not thinking about it, you feel that life. Sometimes you can fill it with these wonderful big trees. In my garden in England, in Wales, we have a big, big tree called a beech tree. Very big tree and very strong. And you can feel the life in that tree. It's not like my life, of course. But it's a life, it's a presence. So we need to be receptive to the living world around us. If we're not receptive to the living world around us, we can't be receptive to human beings. In fact, Sangharakshita says, if we do not feel that the universe is alive or that nature is alive, we cannot gain enlightenment. We need to be receptive to art. To beauty in song, in dance, in painting, and so on. By art, I mean works that really communicate some higher experience. So we need to be working at this receptivity. Not just busy, busy, busy all the time. Push, push, push. Times, times, or chatter, chatter, chatter. Just sitting doing nothing. Not trying to do anything. Not thinking about anything. Just open. Just seeing what happens. We've just had a Dhammacharis retreat in which we had 7 full days of silence. And it's amazing what you can feel when you stop chattering. You can feel that there's wonderful monsoon gut nature. I saw a Milind one day go out of meditation. And there's a wonderful waterfall coming down the mountain. And he bowed to the waterfall. And then he gave a big cheeky smile like he does. But yes, one feels like that. You see a lovely snake I saw. The very poisonous green snake. It's so beautiful. He doesn't want to hurt me. It's just his defense mechanism, his hunting mechanism. So beautiful green. So you just look. You just feel. You don't look at anything. Just open yourself up. So, is there spiritual receptivity in your life? What are you doing to develop it? If snakes are too difficult, you can come on to them later. Yes, we can be developing all these 5. The Buddha says of Buddha Anusmriti that we should practice it all the time. He says you should practice it when you're standing, sitting, walking, lying down. He says you should practice Buddha Anusmriti when you're in your home, surrounded by children.
आणि तुमचं असं म्हणतात की तुम्ही बुद्धानुसमृतीचे असा तुमच्या घरामध्ये मुला अवती भोवती असताना सुद्धा केला पाहिजे.
Remember the Buddha.
बुद्धाचं स्मरण.
So we can exercise all these five all the time. And we can evaluate our lives in the light of these. Is there integration? What are you doing to develop it? What are you doing to develop positive emotion? What are you doing to die spiritually? What are you doing to be reborn spiritually? What are you doing to develop spiritual receptivity? If you do these five things, you'll gradually move through the processes of the path. You'll move from integration to positive emotion, to spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and then you will not have to make any more effort. Done will be what has to be done. The process will have been complete. This is the promise of our spiritual path. So I hope you've seen this path in its height. I hope you've seen it in its breadth. And I hope that you've seen how you yourself can put your feet on that path. I hope you've seen what you can do in every aspect of your life to move forward. If you will do that, you will be fulfilling the teaching of our great Guru Urgyen Sangrakshita. You will be fulfilling the vision of Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. And you will be completing the path of that great human being, the greatest human being that's ever been, the Buddha.